She had definitely heard that voice before. She couldn't resist asking him,
"Excuse me, monsieur. I think we have met before, but I just can't remember where."
"These things happen, mademoiselle. One can remind one of someone else. I've never seen you before."
"Allow me to introduce myself, then. I'm Margot Pale. I'm Hungarian."
"Pleased to meet you."
When the man didn't respond with his name, Margot looked at Selva quizzically. Constance got up to go to the toilet. She turned to Selva and said in Turkish,
"I need to pee,"
so the men in the compartment couldn't understand. Selva couldn't help laughing at how Constance expressed herself.
"Well done, Constance," Selva said. "My efforts have not been in vain."
David Russo turned red. He wondered if he should tell them he understood Turkish, so as not to embarrass them later if they spoke about private things. As the cathedrals with their domes and spires got nearer, they realized they were arriving at a large city. The train huffed and puffed, slowed down, and finally came to a halt with a big moan. Selva read the sign, Reims.
"Are we stopping here?" asked Marcel.
"Ferit and Raphael know all the details. We should ask them," Selva answered.
Rafo appeared at the door. The man wearing his cap put on his glasses and started reading again, hiding himself behind his newspaper.
"We're stopping here for a little while," said Rafo. "Are you hungry?"
"Can we get off?" asked Constance.
"There's no need to. We've got plenty to eat here," said Marcel.
Selva saw Ferit from the window, rushing toward the front carriages. Fazıl had woken up and was fidgeting on her lap.
"The poor thing has been sitting for hours. Do you think I should take him out for a breath of fresh air?"
"We've only got about 20 minutes here. Please don't go far, Selva," Rafo warned. "If you're getting off, perhaps you should get a few things to eat."
"I've got a basket full of food."
"But the next stop might be over the German border. If you want to get off, you'd better do it here."
The old man sighed.
"What difference does it make, monsieur? We may be in France, but we are under German occupation. It doesn't seem to make much difference. Germany, France, France, Germany. The Nazis are everywhere."
"Yes, but at least French is spoken here. We can understand the language," said Raphael. Selva got up and put Fazıl's jacket on.
"Rafo, will you come with me?"
"I have to check the passengers Ferit put me in charge of. There might be an identity check. You'd better go on your own."
"Is there anything I can get for anyone?" asked Selva.
"I'll come with you," said Constance.
When she got up, Margot, Marcel, and David Russo left too. No one except the two elderly men and the kids remained in the compartment. The children's aunt, Camilla, had made them swear again and again that they wouldn't leave the compartment. Outside, Margot and Marcel changed platforms looking for cigarettes, and Selva looked for a toilet for her son. The toilet on the train had started to smell bad after the few hours' journey. When she saw Ferit returning from Evelyn's carriage, she asked if he wanted any cigarettes.
"Thanks, but no thanks," he replied. "I've got plenty of extras. But I wouldn't recommend you wander too far. If the train starts moving, it'll be difficult to get back on with the child."
"I'll come back as soon as we found the toilet," Selva said.
Ferit got on the train and was walking along the corridor when he saw an SS official going into Selva's compartment. His hair stood on end like a cat's when it has seen a dog. He prepared himself for the possible danger ahead. He walked slowly and waited beside the door.
"Tickets, please, and your identity cards," said the SS official.
Suddenly Perla felt a pain in her joints. Her face turned yellow. Samuel reached for his bag and pulled out the passports.
"What's your name?"
"Sammy."
"Are you Turkish?"
"Yes."
"Really?"
Samuel repeated his answer in Turkish and handed over the passports. The man checked them.
"And this is your sister?"
"Yes."
"I'm Turkish,"
said Perla in Turkish. Her voice was trembling.
"You don't look Turkish to me. Did your mother sleep with a carrot?"
Samuel imagined clearing his throat and spitting all over the man's face. When the official finished with the kids, he turned to the old man, who was sitting quietly.
Ticket, identity.
The old man took his passport and identity card from his pocket. The official glanced at them and returned them. When the other old man's turn came, Ferit stepped in.
Monsieur, I'm the group leader, he said. Please don't trouble yourself. I can gather all the passports and identity cards and bring them to you, if you like.
Is this a tourist carriage? Are you their guide?
As you know, it is impossible to organize tourist travel these days. This carriage was sent from Turkey to pick up Turkish citizens stranded in Europe. All the stations en route have been informed. Haven't you?
I haven't been told anything about it.
That's strange. Our embassy was assured that every station was informed before the train departed.
If these people are returning to Turkey, what are they doing on a train bound for Frankfurt and Berlin?
These tickets are only for Berlin. I have the tickets for the remainder of their journey. I took the precaution of safekeeping them, because there are a considerable number of elderly people and children in the group. I didn't want them to be confused or lose their tickets. There are also passengers boarding the train in Germany. The Turkish government can't afford to provide different carriages for each place. We thank God at least they send this one. Fine, bring me all the tickets and passports. You'll find me in the first carriage right at the front. I won't let you go without seeing all of them. Don't worry, I'll find you.
I hope there isn't anyone on the wanted list.
You think I'd go through Germany with a wanted person in my group?
The official left the compartment, and Ferit and the man in the cap looked at each other for a split second. The man wiped his forehead with his handkerchief. Raphael stood by the door, pale-faced.
Raphael, you'd better collect up the passports and tickets from everyone in the carriage, said Ferit. I'll go and find those still outside.
Some who had gotten off were walking back slowly. Ferit stood by the carriage door, waving at them to hurry back. Then he got off and ran toward the toilets to warn those who were there. About 30 people were waiting on the platform to board the train. They were getting agitated and jostling one another to get on. When Selva saw the man with the SS band in the carriage, she broke out into a sweat. She was exhausted, both from fear and from carrying Fazul. Immediately, she got their tickets and passport ready for collection. Raphael collected everything from those who had gotten back on board. Everyone was back in their places except Perla, who was sitting upright in the seat by the door with an odd look on her face.
You should really be sitting in your own seat, Perry. That's Marcel's seat, Selva said, but Perla didn't move. What's wrong with you? Were you very scared?
The girl didn't reply.
Perla, Perry, my darling, are you all right? Why don't you sit in your own seat?
Perla stood up, and Selva saw the bloodstains spreading across her blue-checked skirt.
My God, what happened? Don't tell me you're...
Don't be afraid, Perla. You'll be okay, my pet. I'll help you, she said.
Perla stood there, mortified. The train continued its journey. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Lulling them all into a daze or even to sleep. Their nerves were drained, but they felt more relaxed than when they first boarded the train. They had gotten past one episode. They realized that such events could be dealt with. Perla had settled down with the help of Margot and Selva, and she had changed her skirt. She still felt a twinge of pain in her groin, but more than anything, she felt embarrassed. She sat quietly by the window, avoiding eye contact with her fellow passengers. They were speeding through land covered with woods of dark trees, and cows and sheep grazing the hills. The houses they passed had red tile roofs, window boxes, and magnificent gardens separated by well-groomed hedges. Only a sensitive eye would notice they were passing through a country that had been invaded.
If we don't have something to eat, we'll starve to death, Selva said, taking her food basket down from the luggage rack.
The sadness they felt leaving Paris and their fear leaving Reims had made them lose their appetites. Now there was solidarity among the passengers, who shared the same destiny, and that had made them feel more relaxed. Margot and Constance followed suit and got their food down too. They offered the men, who appeared to only have dry cakes and apples, some of theirs. David Russo was the only one of the three men with a bag full of things to eat. Everyone's mood rose when he pulled out two bottles of very good red wine to go with the food.
"I'll find Raffo,"
Selva said to Margot. "I bet he'd like something to eat, too." Raffo appeared to be quite happy, sharing all the goodies on the table in his compartment.
"If you fancy some wine, pop in to see us," Selva said to her husband.
"If you fancy some cognac, you'd better pop in to see us,"
Raffo said in Turkish. "There's a young man in here who has a bag full of bottles. I wouldn't be surprised if he's an alcoholic."
"He probably needs it to relax his nerves," said Selva.
Seeing that Raffo was happy, she returned to her compartment feeling better. Passengers who had started the journey feeling suspicious were now more relaxed and at ease with each other. They were mingling together and asking all sorts of questions. Everyone was talking except Perla, who still felt embarrassed and just looked out the window, and the man Margot thought she knew. It was gradually getting dark. The lights of the distant city started twinkling like stars in the sky. Suddenly the train screeched to a halt, causing the passengers to jolt sharply. Shots were heard in the distance. Everybody looked at each other with fear in their eyes. Fazıl started to cry. David Russo got up, lowered the window, and leaned out. The whole compartment was filled with the smell of coal.
"We're not in a station. We seem to be in the middle of nowhere," David said.
Others jostled him to look outside. It was very dark, and there was nothing much to be seen, but it was obvious that the pretty places they had passed through during the afternoon were long gone.
"I must find Raffo. I wonder what's going on," Selva said,
leaving the compartment. When her son saw her leaving, he started to cry.
"Come on, then," she said.
Fazıl toddled toward her, held her hand, and together they tried to walk down the corridor. It was full of people who'd rushed out of their compartments to see what was going on. Selva picked up Fazıl and held him in her arms to prevent him from getting crushed. She looked into each compartment as she passed by. She saw neither her husband nor Ferit. Her heart felt heavy. She walked back to the carriage exit. Marcel was standing by the door. They tried to force the door open and eventually succeeded. Marcel stepped out onto the running board and looked toward the front of the train.
"Madame Selva, there are some armed men standing by the side of the train."
Selva leaned out to have a look too. There were some soldiers holding lamps, gathered around the engine at the front of the train.
"My God, maybe they've taken Raffo away. I can't find him anywhere," she said.
"I'm sure he must have gone to find out what's happening. Why should they pick on him among all these people?"
said Marcel.
"Besides, hasn't he got a Turkish passport?"
"You're probably right. I'm just so on edge. All the same, I'd better walk up to the front just to see."
"Are you out of your mind?" Marcel said. "Go back inside."
Selva felt embarrassed and decided to return to her compartment. As she turned around, she bumped into David Russo, who was right behind her. Although it was dark, she could see the terror in his eyes. They were jutting out like organ stops.
"Did you say there are armed soldiers up front?" he asked. "Yes, somewhere near the engine." "Step aside. Please step aside," he said to Selva and Marcel. "I want to get off." "To go where?" "Wherever. Where I go isn't important. I must get off immediately."
Selva and Marcel looked at each other.
"But we are not in a station. Where on earth will you go?" Marcel asked.
"It doesn't matter. I'm going to get off and walk toward those lights in the distance." "But you don't know where we are, David. You're bound to get lost." "I can follow the railway lines."
David Russo jumped down without using the steps. Marcel and Selva, holding her child, followed him off the train. Marcel tried to hold on to David's arm, and the two began pushing each other.
"You're putting all of us in danger. Get back on the train immediately."
"I can't bear being put back into a camp," said David. "Never again, never."
"Hold on. No one's taking you to a camp."
David freed himself from Marcel. He started running toward the back of the train. Selva and Marcel ran after him. Fazel, who appeared to be enjoying the chase, began screaming with joy. Suddenly, they heard the sound of footsteps running after them. David started running faster. Then a shot was heard. Suddenly, he stopped. Selva and Marcel ran into him, and they all fell over. The footsteps got nearer and nearer, and then came to a halt beside them. Two armed soldiers were pointing their guns at them.
"What's going on here?" asked one of the soldiers.
"We fell," replied Marcel.
"Were you running away?"
"What for?" said Selva.
"Where were you going then, on a picnic?"
"My son wanted to pee," explained Selva. "These gentlemen wanted to do the same, and needless to say, they felt they had to distance themselves from me."
"Aren't there toilets on the train?"
"Of course there are, but they stink. What's more, there's a line. The carriage is very crowded."
"So why the hell were you running after these men who wanted to take a leak? Why were you running with your child in your arms? How come you fell?"
"I was trying to help my son do his business by the side of the train door. I heard a shot, and I panicked and grabbed my son. I was running away trying to prevent him from being shot when I ran into them."
"What shot? What are you talking about?"
"There was a shot," said Marcel. "Didn't you hear it?"
"Oh, that! That's the peasants trying to scare wild boar from their fields," one of the soldiers said. "Get up."
They looked funny trying to disentangle themselves before they stood up. Selva saw Rafa and Ferit looking open-mouthed and petrified behind the soldiers. She couldn't help laughing.
"I don't see what's so funny,"
Rafa said, reprimanding her.
Selva just couldn't stop laughing. Tears were streaming down her cheeks.
Ferit held out his hand to help her get up, and Rafa picked up his son, who seemed to be having a whale of a time. He was trying to say something to his father while clapping his hands. Ferit also helped Marcel and David get up.
"Return to your carriage at once," said the soldier. "I also want to see your identity cards. We'll see how much of all this is true."
"What do you want from my wife?" asked Rafa.
"She was running away."
"What? Don't make me laugh," he said.
"We'll find out soon," the soldier replied.
Back in the carriage, the other passengers were all hanging out of the windows trying to see what was happening. When Selva returned to the compartment with the soldier, the other occupants started panicking. The man in the cap was totally unaware of what was going on. He was sleeping with his cap pulled down to his nose.
"Right, I want to see all three tickets and your identity cards. I want to see the child's as well," said the soldier.
"The child is registered in my passport," Selva said. Then she turned to her son and pretended to scold him. "All this is because of you," she said to Fazel, who looked surprised. "Just because you couldn't hang on for a little while."
Rafa took out his passport, too. Ferit rambled on with an explanation of what they were doing outside while the soldier scrutinized Selva's, David's, Marcel's, and Rafa's passports and tickets.
"You've bothered us for nothing," one of them said. "You'd better use the toilets on board next time you want to relieve yourself."
Then they turned their backs and marched away. As soon as they left, the man in the cap pushed it back and sat upright. David was sitting in his seat as if in a trance.
"What the hell were you doing outside?"
Rafa asked furiously. Selva couldn't reply because she was scared of bursting into laughter again. Marcel explained what happened and turned to David.
"Didn't I tell you you'd get us all into trouble?" he shouted.
Tears started running from David's empty eyes.
"Why are you so scared?"
Selva asked, approaching him. David didn't answer.
"You mentioned a camp. Did they take you to a camp before?"
"Yes, I just came out of one."
Selva sat beside him and put her arms around him. She gently stroked his hair. Everyone in the compartment was totally silent. Eventually, Marcel broke the silence.
"So why did we stop? What did the armed soldiers want?"
"Apparently we are waiting for some soldiers to board this train.
They're being transported somewhere.
I wonder how long it will take, asked Margot.
It seems that we may be spending one or two nights here, said Ferit. A murmur of discontent spread to the compartment.
I'd like to have a word with you outside, Rafo said to his wife.
Fazul, who was sitting on Perla's lap, started to make a fuss when he saw his parents leaving the compartment, but one look from his father put a stop to that. Rafo and Selva stood in the corridor face to face.
Listen to me, Selva. I'm warning you for the last time. If you bite off more than you can chew trying to help others again, I promise I'll divorce you the minute we get to Istanbul.
Selva turned her back on him and returned to the compartment, slamming the door in his face. The next morning, even though the sun was low, the rays disturbed David and woke him up. The sedative the old man had given him last night had sent him into such a deep sleep that he woke up totally rejuvenated and happy. When he was wide awake, he remembered the previous night's incident and blushed. He had behaved like an idiot. Even though his traveling companions had treated him with compassion after hearing his story, he couldn't help feeling ashamed.
I wish I'd listened to those back home when I was released from the camp and seen a doctor, he thought. If I'd done that, it's possible we might not have had that incident last night.
He realized that if Marcel and Selva hadn't run after him, he might have been shot by the soldiers trying to stop him from running away. He decided he was indeed a lucky soul. This was the second time his life had been spared by God. A new day was dawning, a sunny, quiet, run-of-the-mill day. David, who couldn't bear being cooped up in small spaces since his time in the camp, felt stifled by the thought of spending the whole day in the compartment. He tried to relax.
Your life has been spared yet again, he thought. You're among friends. You're heading toward freedom. Come on, man, pull yourself together.
Margot was opposite him, sleeping. He smiled to himself. She was a beautiful girl. He wished she had been the one who showed him the care Selva had. Maybe then this boring journey would be a little more interesting. Selva, Perla, and Fazul weren't in the compartment. They had probably gone to the toilet. The rest were still sleeping, their heads leaning on the shoulders of those next to them. Samuel's head was on the knees of the man in the cap. David went outside to go to the toilet and saw Selva talking to Perla.
For God's sake, David, don't get off again, even if you really need to relieve yourself. They might recognize you and cause trouble.
I promise I won't. Please don't worry, David assured her.
How did you sleep?
Extremely well. Madame Alfandari, I want to apologize sincerely for last night. Had it not been for you and Marcel, I would have been in big trouble. I'm deeply sorry for putting you in danger. Please forgive me.
Don't mention it, and let's not talk about it again. There's nothing more natural than being scared of armed soldiers after what you've been through. I can assure you that there is no need to apologize. Now then, I want to ask you a favor. First of all, please call me Selva. And second, throughout this journey, I want you to feel free to talk to me about anything, anytime, whatever it is that bothers you.
I promise you it won't happen again.
I know, David. This sort of thing doesn't often recur anyway. If it does, we'll all get locked up.
Just then David saw Raphael coming out of another compartment.
Here comes your husband, he said, trying to cheer her up, but she wasn't amused.
Rafo hugged and kissed his son.
Did you sleep well? He asked his wife.
Selva didn't reply, and David felt obliged to answer.
Extremely, he said.
How about you?
Thanks to you, I've been having nightmares all night,
Rafo replied. David bent his head down as his face turned crimson. Selva held Fazul by the hand and walked him back to the compartment. Margot had woken up and was staring at the man in the corner.
Haven't you figured out who he is yet? Selva asked.
No, I just can't place him.
The man's cap had slid back while he was sleeping, and despite the stubble on his face, Margot could see him more clearly now.
Oh, dear,
she said suddenly.
Selva, I've got it. I know who he is. So who is he? Come outside with me.
Margot pulled herself together and they went out.
I'm dying to know. For God's sake, who is he? Is he someone important? You bet. He's only one of the world's leading scientists. He's a force to reckon with in the world of physics. 2 years ago, he won many awards for some discovery or other. Don't you remember? I remember seeing his photograph all over the medical magazines at work. He was being interviewed on the radio all the time. He's Meyer. Siegfried Meyer. That's it. The famous Siegfried Meyer. Oh, yes, I remember. Oh, Margot,
said Selva, choking with excitement.
The Germans must be looking for him everywhere. They take him away the moment they spotted him.
She wanted to share this exciting discovery with her husband. What a pity that she was still annoyed with him. They returned to the compartment. Now Selva started scrutinizing the man's face herself.
Yes, of course it was him. She was absolutely sure. In spite of his shaven head and having no beard, it was definitely him.
The sun had finally brightened up the whole compartment. Everyone had woken up. When Samuel opened his eyes and realized he had his head on a stranger's lap, he immediately sat up.
Where's Perla?
He asked Margot, who was smiling at him.
Let me go and find her. Go if you wish, but don't worry about your sister. She's fine now. There's nothing to worry about.
All the same, Samuel got up and walked out. When Selva heard him greeting Ferit outside, she jumped from her seat and rushed out to see him.
Ferit, I need to tell you something, she said, holding him by the arm.
What? Has something gone wrong again?
Ferit, do you know who's traveling with us in our compartment?
Who?
Siegfried Meyer, the...
Ferit covered her mouth with his hand.
Yes, I know.
Why didn't you tell us?
No one knows. Is there anyone else who does?
Margot. She's the one who recognized him.
Please keep this to yourselves, he said.
Does Raphael know?
Yes, he's the only one apart from me.
What name is he traveling under?
She tried to hide the fact that she was disappointed her husband hadn't shared his knowledge with her.
Cohen.
Has he got a Turkish passport? She asked.
Yes, he does.
But he doesn't speak Turkish, does he?
That's why I sat him in the same compartment as you and David, and those who, thanks to you, can manage a few Turkish words. The Nazis don't generally speak Turkish, but you never know. An officer who spent time in Turkey might come along and want to show off. I know how quick and capable you are in such situations. I thought I'd better put him with you.
How would I have known that? I should have been warned.
I have faith in you, Selva. You don't miss a thing.
Samuel interrupted their conversation.
How much longer do you think we're going to wait here? He asked.
That's what I was just going to find out, replied Ferit. I'm just going to see my wife, and then find out if anyone knows when we're supposed to continue.
Give my regards to Evelyn, even though I've never met her. Ask her if she needs anything to eat or drink,
Selva offered.
Thank you, but I'm afraid that I can't do that. She isn't aware we are all traveling on the same train.
That Thursday by the German border was a rather long day. It was boring being cooped up in the train. Time passed more easily when the train moved through ever-changing scenery. Stopping away from a town or village in the middle of nowhere, waiting from morning until night, was stifling, even though they were allowed out of the train to stretch their legs. Most of the passengers took advantage of a stroll along the track to get a breath of fresh air. Ferit spent most of his time with his wife. In spite of her brother's insistence, Perla decided not to go out, but rather to lie down and read her book in the nearly empty compartment. The only other person who stayed was the man in the cap. He would be solving puzzles until the early hours of the morning. At one point, David and Marcel played backgammon on a board Marcel had brought with him. Passengers in different compartments, even in different carriages, now had a chance to mingle and talk with one another. Those in the same carriage somehow felt bound together. Realizing they shared the same fate, they had begun to feel more and more like a family. Even Selva, who had avoided eye contact with her husband all day long, had begun to relax a little. But at about 5 o'clock, as the evening sky turned from blue to purple, people started feeling restless again. The weather turned cooler, and everyone returned to their seats, cramming into the small compartments. How much longer would this tiring journey last? Marcel was able to coax a very uncooperative conductor who hadn't deigned to answer any questions all day to give them some sort of indication as to when they'd continue their journey.
"Don't hold me to it, but I don't think for one moment we'll be leaving before midnight," he said, grinning through his teeth.
Having eaten dinner in their compartments, the passengers decided to call it a day. They began to settle down to sleep early. Selva had had to take Fazel to the toilet frequently the previous night, so she swapped seats and sat by the door, next to Siegfried. When the lights were turned off, just a few switched on their reading lights. Selva turned to the man whose identity she finally knew.
"Excuse me, monsieur. Would you mind terribly if I read for a little while? Or would you prefer me to switch off my reading light?" she asked softly.
"Read to your heart's content, madam. I don't mind at all."
"Thank you very much. By the way, I'm Selva, Selva Alfandari. We haven't had the opportunity to meet yet."
"Let me introduce myself, too. My name is Cohen," said the man.
"I'm pleased to meet you, Monsieur Cohen. I hope my son isn't disturbing you too much with his fidgeting."
"He's a bright lad, and very lovable,"
the man replied. They had spent so much time together, even he was beginning to relax a bit now. When he took off his cap in the dim light of the compartment, Margot winked at Selva. A new night was beginning. Who knew what the following day had in store? Feeling a bit more optimistic, the passengers in the Star and Crescent carriage went to sleep. Selva was dreaming that they had reached Istanbul. Her father had come to meet her. She wasn't on a train, she was on a ship. As the ship approached the deep blue harbor with its background of minarets and domes, she jumped into the sea, swimming toward her father, who was waiting. Father and daughter were diving hand in hand into the depths of the sea. How she missed being together with him. They were swimming and swimming down among the fish and the green seaweed. Selva was woken up by a sudden shudder.
"What's happening?"
Constance whispered.
"I think we're moving."
No one knew what time it was. Outside it was still pitch dark. While the train began to creak into motion, Fazel grumbled, turning in Selva's arms. David Russo walked into the corridor, making sure not to disturb anyone. It was impossible for him to remain in the same place for more than a few hours. He lit a cigarette. Far away in the distance, lights could be seen. Would his life ever brighten again? As he paced up and down the corridor, the dark blue sky was gradually making way for the crimson-red colors of dawn. The train crossed the German frontier while they were having breakfast. Selva's heart nearly broke in fear when she saw Ferit and Rafo walking toward customs.
"Please, God, protect us. Don't let anything go wrong," she prayed aloud.
She had woken up so happy after her dream, and she didn't want anything to spoil it.
"I wonder if we could go out for some fresh air," asked Constance.
"Stay right where you are," replied her husband.
Margot boiled some water on the hot plate at the end of the corridor. Their bread had become stale, but they were managing with biscuits and cakes. Selva offered some to the old man, who never wanted to eat anything.
"You didn't eat anything last night either. I know it's all a bit dry, but please let me slice you a piece of cake at least."
"Thank you, my dear," he said. "I just can't."
"I guess dry cake isn't very appetizing. How about a slice of salami?"
"I'll just have some tea, thank you."
Selva was suddenly aware of a bad smell coming from the salami she'd taken from her basket.
I'd better throw this away in the station later, she thought to herself. She left the basket on her seat to go to the toilet. Stepping out of the compartment, she found several German soldiers in the corridor checking the compartments. Selva joined the line at the toilet, and when she'd come out, the Germans had gone. Rafo had returned and asked Margot where his wife was. When he saw Selva, he asked,
Am I still getting the silent treatment?
Weren't you the one divorcing me?
Don't be silly, for God's sake.
Selva passed by her husband without saying anything, and Rafo grabbed her by the arm.
Can't you see that I worry about you? You keep putting yourself in dangerous situations. One of these days you'll get into serious trouble.
Back in the compartment, Selva lifted her basket to put it away, but the salami was no longer there. She looked around. Fazul was sitting on Samuel's lap, munching away. She immediately rushed and took the remaining piece from him.
Did you eat all of it? She asked.
Fazul looked at her with pleasure in his eyes, nodding his head.
What have you done? This salami is rotten.
She became extremely anxious. What would she do if Fazul became sick on the train?
He ate this rotten salami while I was in the toilet,
she said, turning to Margot.
What are we going to do? Was it really rotten? He seemed to be enjoying it immensely. He loves salami. Don't worry. The worst that can happen is that he gets the runs.
The train rocked again, and they were on their way. Farid came into the compartment.
I hope we're safe, he said. We managed to cross the German border without any bother.
Didn't they ask you anything?
What to ask? Said the old man. We're coming from a country they're occupying. There's no such thing as a border anymore.
Their entry into Germany went without a hitch, and the carriage was filled with joy. Everyone was talking, laughing, and joking together. Siegfried and the old man, whose name they found out was Aseo, were having a deep conversation in German. The rays of the autumn sun filled the compartment. First the train passed through peaceful villages with small mud-roofed houses and neat vegetable gardens and fields of grazing cows. Then there were small towns with stone houses under red-tiled roofs and swimming pools and churches. Finally, they moved through cities with Baroque buildings. The train was going full steam, as if they were racing against time.
Ah, look at that. We've just passed Karlsruhe station, announced Marcel.
Karlsruhe is in the south, the old man said anxiously. I wonder where they are taking us.
A cloud came over Siegfried's face, too.
Would you like a cigarette, Monsieur Cohen? Asked Margot.
Thank you, but I'd rather smoke my own brand, he replied, walking out into the corridor.
Aseo followed him. Margot watched Siegfried take an elegant cigarette case from his pocket and offer a cigarette to Aseo. The two men started smoking, and once again, anxiety spread through the compartment. Everyone except the children was disturbed.
I'm going to find Ferit, Marcel said, leaving the compartment.
When he came back, he reported,
Apparently we are unable to follow our route. Some of the tracks have been bombed and others have been closed. It seems we have to continue our journey, weaving our way north and south, like this. What else can they do? The journey will be longer, but it seems there's nothing to worry about.
After leaving Karlsruhe, the train turned north toward Mannheim, and they relaxed again.
If this anxiety continues, Selva, it will be the death of us, I'm sure.
Margot said.
If this is as bad as it gets, I can put up with it, Selva replied.
The train reached Frankfurt around lunchtime. Despite the fact that the station was inundated with soldiers, it was nice to be in a crowded station, bustling with people, after spending so much time in the middle of nowhere. But the presence of soldiers and SS guards became more and more pervasive. The worst they'd experienced was the wait at the border, so they felt confident enough to get off the train for the half-hour stop. They hoped they would have sufficient time to replenish their food, buy newspapers, or have coffee in the station cafe. Selva didn't leave her seat. She didn't want to disturb Fazul, who had had a stomachache for over an hour.
He had managed to relax after having a cup of tea and falling asleep on her lap. Asseo and Siegfried were the only others remaining in the compartment. Asseo's face was very pale.
"Why don't you go out for some fresh air, Monsieur Asseo?" Selva asked.
"I don't feel well enough to cope with the crowds," he replied.
"Of course you're not well enough. You've hardly eaten a thing. I'll give you some cake when Fazul wakes up."
"I must say I find you Turks extremely generous," replied Asseo. "I hope my health will allow me to reach your country."
"Don't say things like that, Monsieur Asseo. You'll be all right. You'll see. We only have another few days before we get to Turkey."
"Provided, of course, we don't have to go too slowly and we're not kept hanging around. If we continue at this rate, the journey could even take a month."
"That's wartime for you," said Selva.
Rafo didn't see his wife among the crowd on the platform, so he went back to the train.
"What's wrong, Selva? Why didn't you and Fazul get off?"
"Fazul has a bad stomachache. He ate a huge piece of rotten salami this morning."
Her anxiety over her son had made her forget about their fight.
"Where did he get the salami?"
"From my food basket." "Why on earth did you let him eat it?"
"He took it when I went to the toilet."
Suddenly she realized that she had offered some salami to the old man.
"Monsieur Asseo, I assure you I didn't know it was bad. It's good you didn't accept it."
The old man smiled.
"Believe me, madame, I've had to eat far worse things than that. The important thing is not to go hungry."
"Rafo," Selva said, "will you go and find a pharmacy in the station and get something for Fazul's tummy immediately?"
Rafo took Siegfried's cigarette order and left. Asseo and Siegfried sat with Marcel's backgammon set between them and started playing. Selva waited anxiously. Rafo took a long time to come back, but eventually he did, laden with all sorts of things.
"What took you so long? I was worried," said Selva.
"Really, young lady, now you know what it means to worry."
"You think I don't know, Rafo?"
She reminded him of the anxiety she had gone through when he was taken away by the Gestapo. Rafo kissed Selva affectionately on the cheek.
"I couldn't find a pharmacy, Selva. I couldn't risk leaving the station to look for one. I asked a nurse who's in another carriage, and she told me to either make him be sick or give him something diuretic to eat. She assured me he would be okay after that." "Where on earth will I find something diuretic here? Are you suggesting that I cook him vegetables on the train?"
"She suggested salty water to make him vomit."
Selva screwed up her face.
"He's relaxed now. Let me see how he is when he wakes up."
Rafo looked at the men playing backgammon.
"Who's winning, gentlemen?"
"Is it possible to win playing him?" said Asseo.
"Don't tell me Monsieur Cohen is a backgammon champion."
"I win whenever we play," replied Siegfried.
Selva decided then that the two men must be old friends. She hadn't realized it before, because they had hardly spoken to each other. She thought they had just met on the train.
"I'm a good player, too," said Rafo.
"In that case, you should play the winner," said Siegfried.
When at last those who had got off started returning to their seats, Selva gave a sigh of relief. She wanted to continue the journey without stopping at all. Although she had no one to meet her there, she wanted to return to her country as soon as possible. Her father had met the director of the immigration department. He obviously knew of their imminent journey. Would her mother be there to meet her? If her mother knew the date of her return, she would probably come in spite of her father. Her heart felt heavy just thinking about it. Now she couldn't bear to think of parents and children not communicating with each other. How would she explain all of this to Fazul one day? Thank God he was only a child now, but she was sure that he would be asking questions one day. Margot, Constance, Marcel, David, and the children came back to the compartment loaded with food, drinks, and newspapers. Siegfried and Asseo immediately fell upon the newspapers.
"Russia and Czechoslovakia have signed an agreement,"
Siegfried said after scanning his paper, and everyone was all ears.
The Russians have agreed to train the Czechs on their own soil in order to fight the Germans.
They did the same with Poland, said Aseo. The Germans were prepared to let the Poles train for their own purposes, but then in 1939 they invaded.
The Russians don't want to give up Poland.
It's all up to the British, said Siegfried. Churchill claims he can't force his new allies to give up vital territories. However, if he insisted, the question of the border between Russia and Poland could be solved.
Look what it says here.
What? I haven't read anything good yet.
There's a statement saying that the 1939 agreement is no longer valid. In other words, Poland can redraw her borders, said Aseo.
You're very optimistic. This is just a ploy to delay things. If it were up to me, I'd be against both the Czechs and Poles training in Russia.
There's a saying in Turkish, Monsieur Cohen, said Raffo. He who falls into the sea will cling even to a serpent.
That's very appropriate, said Siegfried. It certainly explains this situation.
Are the two of you Polish?
Asked Marcel.
We aren't,
answered the old man with a sad smile.
We have Turkish passports.
Aseo and Siegfried closed the backgammon board. Who won? Asked Raffo.
The outcome was obvious right from the start,
Siegfried answered, smiling cheerfully. Margot and Selva looked at each other happily. They realized he'd finally managed to overcome his tension. Then the train pulled away. The skinny conductor had been replaced by a more robust one.
Where are we stopping on the way to Berlin?
Asked Marcel. This new conductor was more forthcoming.
We have an 8 to 10 hour journey ahead of us. If there are no problems and no instructions to the contrary, we should stop at Kassel and Magdeburg on the way.
It started to rain as they passed through woods full of tall trees with their leaves turning red, and then the suburban towns again. The pouring rain made it impossible to see through the windows. The passengers in the various compartments felt secure together in their own little worlds. The men played backgammon, and the women were exchanging recipes. The pain in Fozzle's stomach disturbed him from time to time, but then he calmed down. The passengers seemed to have lost all notion of time. It was dark all around, and a strong wind had started to blow. Food appeared all over again. Fozzle saw the food and wanted to eat in spite of his tummy ache.
You haven't eaten a thing all day, Monsieur Aseo, Selva said. Why don't you have some cheese and biscuits?
The old man took some, thanking her.
I'm opening my last bottle of wine, said David. Now we have to stock up every time we stop.
He poured wine into everyone's tin mugs.
Here's to the exquisite taste of our last French bottle.
They made a toast for a safe rest of the journey, lifting their mugs as if they were glasses.
There's just a little drop more in the bottle,
David whispered into Margot's ear.
I've saved it for you. Who knows if we'll ever drink such good wine again?
Why me?
Beautiful women like you deserve it.
I can see you're feeling much better, David.
Let's just say I'm resigned to my destiny. But I still can't bear being cooped up in narrow spaces.
I'm sure you'll get over it soon. Try not to worry. God has given us the power to deal with anything.
Look! We've just passed Magdeburg!
Selva suddenly shouted.
Weren't we supposed to stop there?
That's not possible, surely. Are you sure?
Asked Marcel.
Of course I am. The sign was huge, but we passed through at full speed.
In that case, we didn't stop at Kassel either, said Aseo. Strange. I didn't notice because I was concentrating on the game.
I wonder why, said David.
Raffo, who was playing backgammon with Siegfried, became alarmed.
I'd better go and find Ferit and see why we didn't stop. He may have spoken to the conductor.
The train was plowing through the night at full speed. They hadn't traveled so fast since they boarded the train, and their efforts to see outside were in vain.
The station Selva claimed to have seen was left far behind. The soft, relaxed atmosphere of just a few minutes before now became tense. Fazl started to be a killjoy again. Rafo and Ferit returned to the compartment.
I spoke to the conductor, Ferit said. Selva was right. We didn't stop at either of the stations. We're heading for Berlin.
Why didn't we stop?
Apparently the train has to be in Berlin before midnight.
In that case, we might be able to make up some lost time, said Constance.
I was supposed to get my wine at Mannheim, said David.
You can get it in Berlin.
At this time of night?
I don't know about wine, but I'm sure you can get beer, young man,
the old man said.
Beer runs out of the taps in this country.
Realizing that there was no chance of stopping and getting off for fresh air, Rafa returned to his own compartment. Some of the others took out their books to read or prepared to sleep. The lights in the compartments had been turned off. Apart from Siegfried, who sat gazing at the dark window, everyone else was sleeping. Suddenly, Fazl started to scream and cry.
My tummy! My tummy hurts!
Shh! Fazl, please don't cry. Everyone's asleep. Show me where it hurts, Selva said.
The child pointed at his tummy with his tiny fingers. Selva removed his pants so they weren't too tight around his waist. She cradled him on her lap, but the child wouldn't stop crying. Everyone switched on their reading lights one by one. Selva looked around desperately.
Shall I call Rafo?
Asked Margot.
What can he do about a stomach ache? You remember he said there was a nurse on board. Surely we can't wake the woman up at this time of night. If it's an emergency, why not? Wait, Margot, she said. Let me try some salty water first. If he throws up, he might feel better. If he doesn't, then we can call this lady.
Everyone started making suggestions at the same time, but no one could really help. While they prepared the salty water, the train came to an abrupt halt, just as it had done before. Selva, who was standing up, nearly fell down. Margot looked outside.
We seem to have stopped at a small station, she said. But I can't see a sign. I wonder where we are.
I just hope to God that we don't stop here for hours.
As Selva gave Fazl the water, she heard the crunch of soldiers' boots outside. Every time she'd heard that sound over the past few years, she got goose pimples. The others heard the familiar sound as well, and they got up from their seats, jostling one another at the window. A squad of soldiers was outside. Agitated passengers could be heard in the corridor. Selva stood with the glass of salty water in her hand. Fazl was frightened, and he stopped crying. Siegfried picked up his cap from his knees and put it on, pulling it well down to his nose. Rafo appeared at the door, looking very pale.
I hear there's going to be a search.
What kind of search?
I think it's to do with a fugitive or something like that.
The soldiers could be heard getting onto the train. They started from the first compartment, asking for identity cards. The faces of those in the compartment were ashen. Rafo stood upright by the door, not knowing exactly what he should do. A soldier saluted and walked in.
Passports, please!
Ferit came running with the passports.
I'm responsible for this carriage. Here are all the passports.
Let everyone hold their own passports.
Ferit handed them out.
Kezban Mitel, Yakub Mitel, Peri Naim, Sami Naim, Monsieur Russo, Monsieur Cohen, Monsieur Aseo.
While the passports were being distributed, Selva was trying to make Fazl drink the salty water.
Drink all of it, all of it. That's my boy. What a good boy.
The child struggled, but his mother managed to coax him into finishing the whole glass. The soldier started to scrutinize the passports. He looked carefully at the face first, and then checked the photograph in the passport. There wasn't a sound from anyone. One of the old man's eyes started twitching badly. While the soldier checked the passports of Siegfried and those sitting opposite Selva, she pushed her finger down Fazl's throat. The child dry-heaved, then dry-heaved again as if he were drowning. He was sitting sideways on his mother's lap, facing Siegfried. Suddenly, he began to struggle, his eyes full of tears, and he retched and vomited all over the man. Apart from the smell of vomit, another disgusting smell spread throughout the compartment. Selva was agitated. She lifted Fazel from her lap onto his feet and tried to remove his badly soiled pants. Mother and son were struggling when he kicked his feet and his pants flew off and landed on Siegfried's lap. Siegfried didn't utter a word. He just sat upright with his cap on, his lap covered in excrement and vomit and a tearful expression in his eyes.
Pardon, Monsieur Cohen, mille pardons. You know the child was ill.
David intervened, saying,
Give me your passport. I'll give it to him.
He took the soiled passport from Siegfried, who remained frozen to the spot, and gave it to the soldier. The smell was unbearable, and Fazel was screaming at the top of his lungs. He, too, was covered in excrement and vomit.
Damned kids, said the soldier.
He looked at the passport David offered him from a distance, as if it were some disgusting insect, and beat a hasty retreat into the corridor. Before getting off the train, he shouted to a dumbstruck Raffo,
Quick, open the window in the corridor!
Even after the soldier had gone, no one moved from their seat. Only Raffo moved, first to open the window in the corridor, then the compartment window. Then he rushed out, as he couldn't stand the foul odor. Nobody uttered a word until the train moved again. The only sound was of Fazel screaming at the top of his lungs. As the train slowly picked up speed, Selva turned to Siegfried.
Please don't move, Monsieur Cohen. I'll clean up my son and then see to you.
Thank you, madame. I thank both you and your son.
After Siegfried finished cleaning himself up, fresh air, smelling of rain, wafted through the window. After the air in the compartment had cleared, they closed the window. Fazel had fallen into a deep sleep in his mother's arms. Aseo stood up and reached for something on the rack, and when he couldn't find it, he turned to David.
Can you help me, young man? There's a box I can't reach behind my suitcase.
David pulled a violin case from the rack. The old man opened it, took the violin out, and turned to his fellow passengers, who all looked surprised.
I'd like to play some music for all of you. I hope it will relax you. At the same time, I think we ought to celebrate young Alfandari's magnificent recovery.
Aseo placed the violin under his chin and started to play with all the power left in his body. The notes of the Paganini violin concerto flowed through the compartment like a stream rippling down snow-covered mountains. The music touched the souls and hearts of those in the compartment, carrying them far away. Siegfried found himself transported to the shade of the pine trees back home. Marcel and Constance were taken back to Lyon, where they had first met, fallen in love, and married. Margot, on the other hand, was reliving that last night before she boarded the train, the night she hadn't wanted to end. The music was transporting them all far beyond the clouds hanging over them. The Adagio. It was as though the bow was playing the notes on their heartstrings, not the violin. As the bow wandered through the chords of the violin, it seemed to relate the sad stories of those on board. It was expressing their fear, degradation, exclusion, separation, longing, and pain. Other people from the carriage started gathering round the compartment door. They crammed into the corridor and listened in awe, almost afraid to breathe in case they broke the magic spell of the music that seemed to describe their grief. The Allegro Spiritoso. The old violinist turned into a young man, transporting the listeners through love and hope to bright sunny days in a different country. He was promising them peace of mind and a happy life ahead in a fruitful land. The exuberant music excited them, lifted them to heaven's most beautiful corners. They seemed to be quickly climbing a ladder leading to hope. Life was beautiful. It was worth living, even in a cramped, narrow corridor. Just one note,
A single note was enough to symbolize the power of humanity. It was about midnight when they arrived at the Berlin station. The engine screeched on the tracks as usual, waking some of those who were sleeping.